Save big on landscaping projects at Menards. Transform your outdoor living space with easy, no-cut block projects. From fire pits and grill stations to planters and fountains, we offer hundreds of free project plans that are easy to build with no block cutting required. Check out our huge selection of concrete landscaping block at Menards. And view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night, and good luck.
Hey, folks. You know, the elephant in the room this week is inside of a beautiful 18th century mirrored hallway. The elephant in the room is the surrender that was signed at Versailles. Now, look, I know you're thinking, wow, Wilson's gone off the deep historical end with some weird references. What the hell? Well, look, if you were a World War I student of history in any conceivable way, you know that the Germans signed the armistice after the end of World War I in Versailles. Versailles itself became a sort of shorthand, sort of a code word for the humiliating surrender of the German people. It became a hook by which Adolf Hitler and the Nazis said that we could restore German pride, we could bring Germany back, we could, if you will, make Germany great again.
In January, the Treaty of Versailles comes into effect, assigning Germany the blame for the First World War. The consequences are costly reparation payments. Hundreds of thousands of young men lose their jobs in the military. Outrage spreads across the country, across all party lines. The Treaty of Versailles is seen as a treaty of shame. This will later play into Hitler's hands.
This is the piece of paper that you can blame. And so it became a fantastic propaganda tool for Hitler. He could point at the Treaty of Versailles and say, look what they say here, look what they do here. And it was this concreteness of what was seen to be so unfair that made it such a wonderful propaganda tool, despite the fact that in reality it wasn't.
Because they had been humiliated by the people who had defeated them in a war. And the Germans were defeated in World War I. It was a shifting but grand alliance of Western powers against Germany, and it was decisive in the end. They ground down Germany's industrial might with Britain and the United States and Australia and the Commonwealth I can describe this in longer terms, but I'm going to skip it. Germany was defeated. They were forced to sign an armistice after World War I that they viewed as a humiliation, and they were correct. It set strict limits on German industrial capacity. It set strict limits on German military build-out. It set strict limits on the German Navy. All of these things that became sort of tokens in the psychological framework that led to World War II for the Germans. And Hitler and his people exploited those brilliantly. And the word Versailles itself became synonymous with that humiliation. It's about to become synonymous with it once again. And that is the elephant in the room. In Versailles, 2 nights ago, Donald Trump had a printout of a DocuSign of the Memorandum of Understanding between the United States and Iran. Let us be very clear about what that memorandum said. Let us be very clear about what that armistice, if you will, said. We are going to pay the Iranians $300 billion. Much of which will come from American taxpayers, some from the Gulf states, but most from us. We are going to leave the Persian Gulf. It says we're going to pull our troops out of the Persian Gulf, the region. And by the way, if you're the Iranians, you could stretch that region to mean American forces in Turkey if you really pushed it. You could stretch it to the American forces of Diego Garcia if you really pushed it. You certainly are going to have the American naval presence of Bahrain removed. Al Udeid in Qatar will go. The U.S. presence at KKMC, King Khalid Military City, and other air force and other air bases in Saudi Arabia, Al Sabah Air Force Base, or Royal Air Base, whatever it's called these days, in Kuwait, will go. The infrastructure of American power projection in the Gulf region is quite evidently covered under this agreement. There's nothing in the agreement that guarantees Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. In fact, the agreement is an agreement to talk about an agreement.
So we'll be working on a parallel effort with the Gulf nations to address non-nuclear issues, such as the conventional ballistic missiles, which we'll be talking about, and support. I mean, they have to have some because other people have some. You got to have some. Somebody said, you shouldn't give them more. And I have guys, I like some of these guys. But I don't think they're smart. Sir, you shouldn't let them have any missile. I said, well, what am I going to do? They're going to let Saudi Arabia have missiles, but they can't have them? Yes, sir. It doesn't work that way, you know?
To consider hypothetically possibly putting together a working group, to form a committee, to examine options, to look at a prospective idea of potentially talking about how one would not have nuclear weapons in Iran. Unlike the unbelievable lies you saw in the beginning of this story about the Memorandum of Understanding, where people like Benny Grinder Johnson said, oh, well, the Iranians are going to downblend their uranium and make it inert. And it never existed. That was a complete lie from top to bottom. Nothing in this agreement has any specifications about the Iranian nuclear weapons program, putative or real. None of the things in this agreement restrict Iran from having a nuclear weapon. The Obama-era JCPOA was an article of faith among a category of Republicans I call Trump skeptics, but later MAGA converts. They're what I call the J-Pod, John Podoretz style Republicans. They're like, I don't like Trump, but Trump will save Israel from the Iranian nuclear program. There's a big cohort of fairly influential Republicans, not just Jewish Republicans, but a lot of influential Republicans who believed that Iran was an existential threat to Israel and only Trump could stop Iran. Only Trump could undo the terrible, 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 no good deal that Obama had done.
And you know what the Iranians did? They laughed at Obama and they said he's a stupid son of a bitch.
This deal does not accomplish even a tenth of what the Obama deal accomplished. And I was a skeptic in the beginning that it would work, but the Obama deal did work. Iran enriched up to a point. Their nuclear program kind of puttered along. It had some setbacks that both we and the Israelis engineered over the years. But what Trump's done now is handed them a long window to negotiate a bullshit agreement with him, because this agreement does not accomplish anything to make the region or the world more secure. Summer always changes the way I want to dress. And it's not just throw on a t-shirt and shorts. I want pieces that feel lighter and more breathable, still put together. Things that are easy, but still stylish. It's one of the reasons I keep coming back to Quince. Their high-quality essentials look and feel amazing. Breathable linen, soft organic cotton, well-made basics without a luxury markup. It's a real balance where everything feels elevated, effortless, and still affordable. Their European linen pants and shirts are the perfect warm weather upgrade to add to your rotation. And they start at just $34. The t-shirts are soft, easy to wear, lightweight cotton sweaters, perfect for cool summer nights. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands because Quince works with ethical factories, cuts out the middleman, and so you're paying for quality, not a brand markup. Quince is way beyond clothing, too. I don't know if you've checked out the website yet, but they've got custom upholstered sofas, cookware, premium bedding. It's the kind of brand you'll end up recommending to everyone for damn near everything. Really, dive into the website. Quince has an amazing portfolio of stuff that's beyond just clothes. I am a huge fan of these Quince linen shorts that I have. I absolutely love them. They are breathable. They're lightweight. And I'm in Florida, folks, so it is a place where you want breathable and lightweight in the summer, believe me. And I love them so much. Quince's linen shirts as well have become a big part of my wardrobe. It's the most breathable and stylish linen, and it's so affordable. It really is something that's become a centerpiece of what I do, especially in these hot summer months. So folks, elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/Lincoln for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/Lincoln for free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com
/Lincoln.
And Donald Trump 2 days ago saying, well, Iran gets to have some ballistic missiles because Saudi has some. It's only fair. We might as well.
No, I'm saying that if other countries have them, it's a little bit unfair for them not to have some. A ballistic missile is not the same thing as what we're talking about when we talk nuclear. But if Saudi Arabia and Qatar and they all have some, I would say in relative proportion, I think it's okay. That's what I mean.
I just want you to be clear, folks. The modality for delivering nuclear weapons in the region or anywhere for almost every single use case is ballistic missiles. Yes, there are nuclear capable cruise missiles. Yeah, that. But the modality for doing it effectively, and yeah, there are airdrop missiles, blah, blah, blah. But the main modality, the main use case of a nuclear weapon is on a ballistic missile. The only way Iran could threaten the United States with a nuclear weapon in the future is with a ballistic missile. And Trump just said, nah, we're going to let them keep 80% of their ballistic missiles and we're not going to try to do anything about their nuclear or their ballistic missile program. Okay. I don't want to hear a freaking word in the future. Oh, the Obama deal was such weakness. It's so dangerous. He gave them $1 billion in a plane, pallets of money in an airplane that...
Oh my, look at this money he's giving us. He tried to bribe his way out. I didn't do that. Nobody mentions that. $1.7 billion and hundreds of millions of dollars. They tried to bribe their way out of it.
Which was a lie, of course, as you know. It was freeing up some of Iran's frozen assets that we had agreed, blah, blah, blah. Trivial amount of money. $1 billion and change versus $300 billion. $300 billion is an economic lifeline for the Iranian government. And what can they do if they've got $300 billion coming in? They will rebuild their military infrastructure first. They will rebuild that first. And that $300 billion also lets them expand their power in the region. Because now you've got a precedent that's been set. Close the straits, pay the man. You want your traffic, Qatar, for your natural gas and the nitrogen fertilizer feedstocks to come through, pay the man. Saudi Arabia, you want ships coming out of Dahran to be able to leave the strait, pay the man. We have given Iran everything. They cannot believe the degree to which Trump capitulated. They cannot imagine it. And the other people that find themselves in the same spot as Iran, in a weird way, are many of Trump's allies, because the flood of tears coming from MAGA over this issue, the absolute mental collapse from Trump's biggest allies, from the people who empowered and enabled him almost more than anyone else, are calling this what it is. It's a capitulation.
On Friday, with this, the United States has officially acknowledged that Iran is a player.
So if this deal is giving them $300 billion, that's a mistake. I hope that is not the case.
How are we better off? Well, what did we get?
It's a signature on a document in Versailles. And we were the losers in the negotiation and in the war. Eric Erickson, who said before the memorandum came out, you know, we don't know what it says yet, but anytime there's a memorandum that is held back, it's probably good. No, it wasn't. And Eric, to his credit, he called a strike after it. He said, nope, you know what? This is surrender. Ben Shapiro, a guy who has been one of the greatest enablers of Donald Trump by being the, I am an intellectual, and yet I respect what Trump is doing about this because the liberals are so much worse. Whatever. Ben Shapiro came out and said, words are on paper. Agreements are made of words. And we can all read these words.
This MOU appears to be, just from the text, a disaster that does not achieve any of the actual signal goals that were set by the administration at the beginning. There were effectively five goals that were set by the administration at the beginning. One was ending the nuclear program, not just nuclear weapons, no nuclear enrichment, zero enrichment. That is not in the deal. Ballistic missiles ended. That is not in the deal. And the president today suggested that ballistic missiles should actually continue to be held by the Iranians because the Saudis, our allies, also hold ballistic missiles. Then you have the support of terrorism. That is not part of the deal. Anything that looks like an attempt to end terrorism, a permanent opening of the Strait of Hormuz toll-free. Not only is that not in the deal appears to have a provision allowing Iran and Oman to attempt to toll the strait after 60 days. And then finally, the idea that Iran would receive some sort of sanctions relief after all of those things happen. We are already seeing from day one relief in their ability to ship oil out of Iran. In my opinion, the vice president of the United States, the chief negotiator on this particular project, has not well served the president.
And he had the same skepticism that almost every other one of these people who was in that Republican, that J-Pod Republican category, that pro-Israel Republican category, they all looked at this thing and they came to the same conclusion. The Wall Street Journal, Rupert Murdoch's favorite newspaper, the one he owns and directs that ed board to support Trump almost all the time, came out and said this was an absolute disaster. The New York Times, who, let's leave the complex politics of the New York Times and Israel and everything else on the table for a second, they called it an absolute disaster. And Trump will care about that a lot because Trump, for all you MAGAs, I hate to disappoint you, but every time Trump goes, I hate the mainstream media, the New York Times, he loves the freaking New York Times. He's obsessed with it. He's a junkie. He is a Times junkie. There's a reason he's got Maggie on speed dial. He's obsessed with the New York Times. When Donald Trump was a Queens white trash bro growing up in the 1940s and 50s, he looked at the New York Times, and especially when he was a younger man in the 60s and 70s, looked at the New York Times and said, that's the smart, rich people. I want their respect. And he's always had a love of the New York Times that he can never admit. It's the darkest secret of Trump. Well, not the darkest, but media secret. But Trump's base is broken over this deal. There was a rift inside the MAGA base the minute he went to war with Iran. And by the way, a friend of mine is a former Air Force general, jokingly said to me, they called it Epic Fury. It should have been called Operation Erectile Flaccidity. It's a terrible war. It was a dumb war. It was executed by Trump's team in the most moronic possible way. The people doing it, the pilots, the sailors, the Marines, the Space Force, they did a brilliant job. But they did a brilliant job with a set of directions that did not have an attachment to a strategy. And so therefore the war failed. We lost the war with Iran. But MAGA is absolutely freaking the hell out. Steve Bannon's been on his show all week, rip shit nuts about this, because the warmongers talked Trump into it. Did they, Steve?
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Trump wanted this. He wanted it for two big reasons, guys. One, he hates Obama. And he wanted to say, I got rid of this stupid Obama deal and I had to invade Iran to do it. I bombed them and they gave up and I'm powerful and Obama is a weak black man.
Because I promise you that's what's underneath all of it with Trump's psychology about Obama. Hates the black guy.
You get it, right? But the base of MAGA is split on this. It was a rift when he went to war. Now it's a canyon.
You've got so many different factions now of the MAGA world fighting each other. You got the Bannon, Tucker Carlson camp. They don't like Israel at all.
And then to the question of whether or not Israel's our ally, in what sense? If Americans die, if the nation gets poorer, if pressing problems in the United States are ignored in favor of theoretical problems, ideological problems, or Israel's problems thousands of miles away, if your average senator is more concerned about Islamic jihad than homelessness or housing prices in America, and that is true, how are they an ally?
They don't like American intervention, worse. They don't want American forces anywhere in the world. They believe in the Dugan-esque tripartite division of the world, said this before, where Trump gets North America and South America, and Putin gets Europe, and Xi gets Asia, and the world is three competing warlords, Africa and South America, maybe a jump ball, right? You've got the pro-Israel faction of the MAGA base, Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro. They're freaking out because they know how bad this is for Israel. Bibi is dead. He's politically, that's it. His big predicate with the Israeli population for a while. And I say this as a guy who helped to advise a race against Bibi in 2021, tried to beat him, didn't make it. Bibi's argument was always, I have Trump in my pocket. I can make America do whatever Israel wants. That did not turn out in the last few days to be true. You've got Trump basically saying, Bibi's gone crazy. He's in Lebanon. It's out of control. He's acting, what the fuck is wrong with you? Trump asked him, according to ABC.
Axios was the first to report details of a phone conversation between President Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In that call, Trump called his Israeli counterpart effing crazy. That's a direct quote.
On Monday, Donald Trump got steamed with Prime Minister Netanyahu because Netanyahu had launched this invasion and this attack on Lebanon and southern Lebanon. It had led the Iranians to say, we're done with peace talks. And Trump got him on the horn and really lit into him, said, you're effing crazy. What the F are you doing? I'm keeping your behind out of prison. And basically, you need to know when to stop. And the description that we were given of this is Donald Trump was really steamed. He subsequently came out on a New York Post podcast and said that, well, I wasn't really angry, I was perturbed, but he confirmed he indeed did say that.
So you've got that pro-Israel part of the MAGA coalition. And by the way, Bibi was enormously helpful to Donald Trump with American Jewish voters, including a lot of Democrats. Let's be real. ETTD, Bibi. Sorry, bub. You've got this group of MAGA Republicans who have seen the damage this war has done to the economy and to their constituents. And they're getting very nervous. There is a rebellion brewing in the U.S. Senate as of on Thursday. There's a report in Punchbowl about the unbelievable amount of tension and anger building up inside the Senate. The war between Thune and Trump is about to emerge into the full light of day. You've got Ted Cruz in the Senate saying, oh, it's a bad precedent to give terrorists billions of dollars.
Now, I don't want to see theocratic Islamists who want to kill us made stronger. Don't give away the victory. I don't believe he's doing so. I hope he's not doing so. I hope his administration is not doing so. But my message is don't. We have defeated their military. Don't suddenly come in with massive buckets of cash to let them rebuild and become a threat to America again.
Ted fucking Cruz, guys. And so the White House is going to do what it does. Any criticism of Trump, you're no longer an ally who has a disagreement. You were an enemy. So they're going to go after Thune. They're going to go after Cruz. They're going to go after anybody who criticizes this deal at all. And the only people that are like liking it so far, like Tom Cotton and Josh Hawley, two
very strong, strong, heterosexual, strong, manly men who definitely, definitely like women and are absolutely, absolutely not on the down low in any way whatsoever. They've been like the only people in the Senate that have been like, yeah, good job, Mr. President. But these guys are doing it because they've got a presidential race to run. And I want to talk about the damage Trump is going to do to the party beyond just this division. Who is going to sign the agreement with the Iranians in person? It's J.D. Vance. The Iranians are not signing this agreement without cameras, without video, without still photographers. And the picture of J.D. Vance shaking some IGRC or mullah's hand to sign this agreement, to memorialize it, is political poison, and Trump knows it. You got Marco Rubio, who has not spoken to the press for days in the minds of most people. But I will tell you what he has done. He has spoken to the press off the record. Marco sees the play here. And knowing Marco, his brain is working out. How can he stick with Trump and subtly reinforce, oh, Vance really made a deal. You know, this was Vance's. Vance really worked hard on this. Vance has a different perspective than I have, perhaps, on how to secure the Middle East. But, you know, he has the president's confidence, and I trust the president. Vance, Kushner, and Witkoff are going to be the goats on this deal. And I don't mean the greatest of all time. I mean the staked goat. You know what a staked goat is? So you got a tiger out in the woods or out in the valley. Nobody can find the tiger. So you take a goat out into the middle of the meadow, you tie it up, stick a stake in the ground, and leave the goat there until the tiger comes, and you shoot the tiger. Witkoff, Kushner, and Vance are the goat. They have been staked out there by Trump. This is the first of many betrayals J.D. Vance will experience at the hands of Donald Trump. Ask Mike Pence. He could tell you very clearly what happens with Donald Trump. No matter how loyal you are, no matter how much you suck Trump's ass, no matter how much you bend down and kiss his feet, once you are an embarrassment or you deviate from the path at all, you're done. It's over. It's cooked. And so Vance is now trying to race ahead of the disaster that's coming.
President Trump said yesterday that he was going to blame you if the talks of the round go sideways. Are you worried that he's going to make you the fall guy?
No, not at all. I mean, I think the president was joking, but as he often does. But no, I think, look, the entire team has worked very well on this, and we've got this thing to a very good place for the American people.
He's going to be the guy in the 2028 primary that every other candidate says, you signed the terrible deal with Iran. You engineered the terrible deal with Iran. How did you advise Donald Trump so badly? And that's how they'll do it. That's how they'll all do it. Donald Trump's instincts were right to strike Iran. And J.D. Vance was in the back of the room undermining Trump. And then he got in the room with the mullahs and gave them everything they wanted. That's the campaign, guys. That's where Tom Cotton goes, or Josh Hawley goes, or Marco Rubio goes, or Ted Cruz goes against Vance. They will gang up on him like a bunch of fucking piranhas in the river and take him down. This deal is a stinker. It's a disaster. Nobody wants their fingerprints on this deal. There's a reason why Marco hasn't spoken about this deal. He didn't want the stink on him. There's a reason why Trump said, if it goes wrong, it's JD's fault.
This way, if it works out, I'm going to take the credit. If it doesn't work out, I'm blaming JD. You better be careful, JD. He's going to turn his plane around and get the hell out of here. Yeah, I like that idea. I think it's a good idea.
Even Trump gets it. The reason Trump did this deal was threefold. Two reasons you know and one reason you don't. And the reason you don't, I'm going to break a little news today because I was told this by somebody in the Gulf in a very good position to know, someone I've known for damn near 40 years, who is an official in a Gulf government now.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
First reason is inflation.
Could you give us a sense of how you see inflation more in the long term? I know you may not want to comment on the ups and downs, but is this mainly driven by energy prices and the Iran war at this point, or do you have any concerns about underlying inflation pressures in the economy? Thank you.
So I can't do much better than the committee just did. So let me restate it. Inflation remains elevated relative to the committee's 2% goal, in part reflecting supply shocks that have driven price increases in certain sectors, including energy.
Folks went to Trump and said, the thing that's driving the inflation is energy costs, dipshit. You've got to get the Gulf open. You've got to get the Straits open. And regardless of Trump's bragging, we've hundreds of tankers. No. Even when they open the Straits, it's still going to be a trickle, not a flood. But that was the number one topic. Got to get inflation under control. Trump also yesterday had his own Fed pick, Kevin Warsh, said we're holding rates steady and we may raise them in the fall. Because inflation doesn't, like, inflation's not a switch, folks. It's a ramp up and a ramp down. The second reason was that gas prices are the tangible manifestation of the failure of this war. They are the immediate, in-your-face, fuck-you manifestation for every MAGA voter out there.
If you could say something to President Trump and he was going to hear you right now, what would it be?
You're a worthless pile of
And you voted for him how many times?
3 times. That was my bad. Apparently, I'm an idiot.
Why do you think gas prices going up?
War. Yeah, that's all I know.
Are you pleased with us being in Iran?
Not really. No, there should be no war. Yeah. Yeah, what do you do?
What do you think about President Trump? How's he doing?
No comment.
Did you
not
vote?
I did vote for him.
Have you noticed gas prices going up lately?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Does that affect you at all?
Definitely. Absolutely.
And while not every MAGA voter is like up on the internal dynamics of the Persian Gulf and not up on the internal dynamics of Iranian succession politics after the Ayatollah has been killed, and not everyone is up on the weird dynamics between the Gulf states and Iran, they do know that gas at $4 a gallon is painful. They do know, even after Trump said the war is over, like God knows how many freaking times, that the war wasn't over. That the war was still continuing, that the war was having the negative impacts without any possibility of victory, which is where we found ourselves. A lot of Trump advisors knew that the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was going to run out on the 27th of this month.
Also, we run out of reserves in about 4 weeks. You know, there are reserves all over the world, and we would really run out, and there'll be a time when you wouldn't be able to get it, and you want to see bedlam? So for all those so-called geniuses that want to show me how smart they are, ask them why didn't they blow up General Soleimani. Ask that of the general and a couple of other people that I like very much, but boy, are they wrong.
It wasn't going to be completely empty, but there are some logistical things about it that make it functionally no longer viable. But the third thing that I was told was that Kushner and Wyckoff, who are both in business with the Saudis and in the Emirates and with Qatar, were given the old sort of plomo o plato, as they used to say in the drug trade, silver or lead. You either make this go away, and if you do, you're both going to get much more investments from our people. And if you don't, we're cutting you off. Now, I'm not a reporter. I know some other people are running down the story because I've given the story to some other people. But the idea that the motivations to end this war were political and financial and not strategic has also blown another hole inside of the MAGA mindset about who Donald Trump is. They've always believed he's playing 47-dimensional quantum string theory chess, you cuck libtard shills in your mainstream media, rhino liberals. You can never understand his genius. No. You learned, didn't you, this week, MAGA? You learned. There's no genius. There's no secret sauce in there. There's no special magical negotiating power. He's a bundle of impulses and insecurities and ego needs. The Iranians played him like a fiddle. They manipulated him from the very first minute. Nothing about this, absolutely nothing about this situation ever was in Trump's control once he fired the first missile. They knew from the beginning that they could not beat the Americans in the air. And they couldn't beat us on the sea. They also knew that we couldn't beat them on land in an invasion. And for them, that was the only thing that really counted. That was the only thing that really mattered to them. Does Trump put 500,000 troops and armor and everything else on the ground in Iran, roll up the IGRC, roll up the Basij, etc.? Could we have done it? I don't think so. Iran is not Iraq. We could spend hours talking about not only the culture, political environment, and geography of the two countries as war-fighting questions. We couldn't have done it because America can't sustain that sort of thing anymore. We are led by a weak man. We are led by a man who's easily distracted. We are led by a man who really doesn't give a shit about America's troops. It's all posturing on their part, right? They want the troops to be around looking like fit war fodders for Pete Hegseth's workout sessions. And they want them to be escorts for UFC fighters at the White House. They would have stacked bodies by the tens of thousands in a war with Iran, and they knew it. Iran had the advantage from the very beginning. We didn't have a strategy because Trump never has a strategy. In the negotiation, we never had a strategy. Trump just wanted it to be over. He's bored. He's restless. He's tired. He doesn't like what's happening because it's not good for his polling. Ending it is not good for his polling either, by the way. We don't have a lot of data yet back, but we're hopefully going to have some by tomorrow or Monday that we'll see just what the political impact of this has been. But the damage has been done, guys. For 117 days, Donald Trump has been at war with Iran, losing. Gas prices are up. Fertilizer prices are up. The damage has been done to Americans in the domestic political and economic sense already. If gas goes down tomorrow to $3 a gallon, people won't be unhappy about that, but it won't fix the damage that's been done already to them. Trump lost the war with Iran. He lost it, if I may use one of his own phrases, bigly. And again, the historical resonance of this should not be underscored. He signed a capitulation, a surrender, a retreat, a humiliation in the beautiful mirrored halls of Versailles. And when he signed that, in many ways, he signed a kind of death warrant for American respect and power in the world. You could see him at the G7 meeting this week. He was not just the odd man out. He was the old man out. He was doddering. He was slow. He could barely walk up and down simple, like two or three steps. He became, as that figure of weakness and that figure of confusion. He couldn't figure out which way to walk off the stage. Macron had to hold his hand and help him off the stage. He became America embodied. He became a symbol of weakness. He became a symbol of impotence. He became a symbol of confusion. He became a symbol of an old man who picked a fight that he couldn't win. And he humiliated this country. He humiliated our military. He humiliated our allies and our friends. And finally, at the end of it all, he humiliated himself. Donald Trump lost the war with Iran, and he signed that surrender document in Versailles. And there will be people who pick at this for years. There will be people who labor over this question for years. And there will be extremists who emerge from the right in this country who eventually say, Trump was so wrong. He humiliated us. We need to restore American power and dignity and honor. But it won't be in the terms that you think. It will be from the far, far, far edges of the right. It will have the same impact that Versailles had on some young Hitler. And if you don't think somebody like that is lurking out there in the fever swamps of MAGA right now waiting to rise up, you are mistaken. This humiliation, this defeat, this capitulation, this surrender, this abject bowing down before Iran, is because Donald Trump never had the intellect or the moral standing or the courage or the integrity or the strategic knowledge to understand the world as it is. The world is not a rally for you, Donald. The world is not the endless, yes, sir, hallelujah chorus you've demanded from so many people for so long. The world is hard. The world is vicious. It is Machiavellian. It is Machiavellian. It is ugly. It demands intellectual rigor. It demands historical knowledge. It demands strategic wisdom. none of which Donald Trump has ever possessed or displayed at any time. Donald Trump lost the war with Iran, and America is about to pay the price. In the meantime, he has collapsed his own party. They are at a civil war amongst themselves over this defeat that I think is going to have very, very bad consequences for Trump. It's a failure that Trump has handed America at every level, including his own allies and his own party. And folks, that is this week's Elephant in the Room.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Good night, and good luck.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.